the Nets' miserable season comes to an end with some brooms. The Sixers can't close the deal, but the Mavericks, well, they're riding high. This is Locked On NBA.
You are Locked On NBA, your daily NBA podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to Locked On NBA, your daily source for all things NBA, part of the Locked On Network, your team every day. Thanks for making this your first listen each and every day. We're free and available on all platforms. My name is Matt Moore. I'm the senior NBA writer for the Action Network and co-host of Locked On Nuggets. You can follow me on Twitter at HP Basketball. His name's David Ramil. He's the co-host of Locked On Heat, with a night off before his series resumes. David, you can find on Twitter at DRamil13. David, three playoff games tonight. We have some big storylines. Where do you want to start?
Well, I think we should start off with the end of the miserable season, as you put it. The Boston Celtics sweeping the Brooklyn Nets in a 116-112 loss there. I mean, it was a great game for the Celtics, not so much for the Nets, who got probably their best outing out of Kevin Durant with 39 points, and it still wasn't enough. The team ultimately fell short, just as they have all season long, couldn't defend, and were defended well by a very good Boston Celtics team.
Jason Tatum, I think, is probably, if we're going to go with the positive here, before I just, you may have to cut me off, and because I just want to unload on this Nets team. But
all right.
With Jason Tatum, I think that's like, to me, is like the positive story here is, you know, Marcus Smart, honestly, tonight, Tatum picked up, he fouled out of this game. Like, Tatum had five fouls and Smart had to come in. Then he fouled out and then Tatum fouled out, and Smart goes 7 of 16 for 20 points with 11 dimes. And he was great. Like, he was just, he just picked up the slack. You know, Jalen Brown, 22 points on 20 shots, not all that efficient, but Smart picked him up, and you got 13 from Al Horford and great defense from everybody. And they're, Tatum, I think, in this series, for him to have fouled out in 36 minutes, finishes with 29 points, 5 dimes, a plus minus of 10, 9 of 16 from the field, and 4 threes. Like, Tatum's on the level now that we've been kind of waiting to see if he would ever get to. Like, Tatum is a premier superstar. Tatum is one of those guys that you expect to be in kind of the MVP buzz going into next season. Like, Tatum has proven that he can be the best player on a championship at least level, if not winning, team.
Yeah, I think that's fair. We've been debating on Locked On Heat where Jimmy Butler ranks, and Jason Tatum's name keeps coming as far as the best players in the playoffs so far. Of course, you've got to give consideration to a couple other players, but I think Tatum has certainly earned that consideration. You think he's done it all year long. He's certainly become an elite-level player, and it's a good thought process by you, considering that he might be in the MVP consideration. I know Celtics fans probably think he deserves to be in that consideration this year, but I think next year we'll probably start to see a lot more leaning his way. We didn't point out Grant Williams, who I thought really had a big night for them off the bench. It seemed like every time Brooklyn made a comeback, they found a way to kick it to a wide-open Williams in the corner who kept knocking down threes. He was 4-6 from three-point line, finished with 14 points in the night, and just seemed like a backbreaker every time he hit one of those shots. So a good night for Williams as well.
I don't think this is going to be the last time we're going to be talking about Williams. I think I liked him last year. I love what he's brought to them this year. Giving them a small ball five option has been huge. And quite honestly, in the next round, assuming that the Bucks advance over the Bulls, I think Grant Williams is going to be a big storyline then too, because the Bucks give up a ton of corner threes with where their defense is at right now. I think Williams is going to have a chance to punish them. The Celtics, they play as a team. Like, they are led by Jason Tatum, but they're not a one person team, and they play together and everyone contributes and everyone moves the ball. And I say all this to very clearly point out the difference between them and the Brooklyn freaking Nets. Oh my God. Thank God this team is gone and out. What a miserable season. What a miserable approach to just building an NBA team. I feel bad for Nets fans. If you catch Nets fans on Twitter, like, it's like Nets fans weren't like, they're not entitled the way that like Lakers fans are, or even to a certain degree, like Knicks fans being like, we're going to get all these stars. Heat fans, I think, are a part of that too because of their championship success. Like, at least the Heat have actually earned it. the Nets fans were just like, okay, cool, we're in Brooklyn now. All right, cool, this is we're like a bigger time. And they get the KG team, and it's a total disaster. Okay, and now we're screwed forever. And they get a really fun team with Jared Allen and Caris LeVert and Spencer Dinwiddie. And that attracts enough attention for Kyrie and KD to come there and completely demolish everything good about it. All of it. Guys that played hard. Nope. Guys that played together. Nope. Smart players that made good defensive plays. Nope. Seth Curry played hard tonight. Kevin Durant played hard tonight. He just could not solve the Celtics defense. Patty Mills played hard tonight because he's a total professional. Blake Griffin came in and did his job. Bruce Brown continues to just impress me in terms of like he approaches the game in the right way. This was not like a desperation at home, you're down 3-0 performance. It just wasn't.
No, they look flat. They just didn't seem to have any kind of cohesion there. Even KD, like I don't want to be critical of him because I'm sure he's going to get plenty of crap. He's already gotten from some mainstream media folks. I understand as the superstar on this team and one of the people behind the thought process of the organization and roster construction here that maybe he deserves some of the criticism, but it looked like early on he looked broken. And I know I'm probably reading too much into it, but it seemed like he was trying. He just wasn't giving the same kind of effort. He was just trying to put up shots. Most of them weren't falling. He wound up having a rather efficient night towards the end there. And of course, a big night from him, 39 points. But overall, it didn't get that vibe from him where he just wanted to take over. And I get the sense that, you know, like most people, he realized that this team was broken and there wasn't a real chance of advancing. Had they even won tonight's game four, they probably wouldn't have been able to do much damage beyond that. It was just a matter of how soon they wanted to call it a wrap on this miserable season. But
so I got to talk about this. The end of the first half, right?
Yeah.
Nets are down 8. Grant Williams hits another 3 because Kyrie Irving fell asleep on him again.
Right.
Okay. There's 1.4 seconds left. Look, those shots almost never go in. I've seen in like the entire time I've been watching NBA, I've seen like a handful of those half court shots. Right. You have Kyrie Irving, who's one of the best like tough shot makers and long shots. Like he can bomb from 35. There's 1.4 seconds left. Okay.
Didn't even bother.
He catches the ball and he just dribbles it out. Wait, what?
I don't know. I don't know what to make of it. It's just like they just felt, they're just done.
Kevin, buddy, I'm begging you to reassess the people that you have tied your basketball future to. I am begging you to reassess this. Steve Nash, who I loved as a player, absolutely adored as a player. He just got his teeth kicked out in this series. Like Udoka just coached circles around him. And there wasn't much that he could do. He didn't have the roster. But even if he did, the offense was a mess, and they didn't make any sort of schematic adjustments whatsoever. There's limitations to what he can do, given both Boston's personnel and how they play. It makes it tough to be like, oh, they don't run like a ton of pick and roll. So it's hard to be like, oh, okay, we're going to change this. We're going to blitz. It's just different. It makes it a lot tougher. But, you know, he got worked. And just this entire season, this team – I have talked about this a lot. They are more of a branding experience than a basketball team. You need a basketball team. You have one with Kenny Atkinson and Jared Allen and Caris LeVert and those guys that played hard and played together. And you jettisoned all of it. Ben Simmons doesn't play suddenly. I would be so frustrated if I was a fan of this Nets team and just be like, this is not, there's no fun in this. This isn't even just like, at least Jazz fans, there's that part of you, which we'll get to, that's like, I love this team. I don't know why they hurt me so. Right. But at least it's like a normal team. Like this right. entire thing was just, honestly, it was a joke this season.
Are we sure that KD and Kyrie have championship aspirations at this point? Like
I've never, you know, they've talked about that a little bit about how like, KD's basically said, like, look, I won championships and it didn't make me happy.
Right.
And I respect that.
Yeah.
Like, I respect that. And Kyrie's talked consistently about
basketball not being that important.
And it being art. That he wants to live his art. Well,
whatever that means.
Yeah. And so ultimately with this, I just kind of one thing I do get to is they really thought that they could run everything. Run all, do the coaching as Kyrie said, Like they were on a Zoom one night being like, what if I post up here and all these types of things, like trying to like run the offense, that they're going to make all the personnel moves that they could, that Kyrie could not play during the regular season, that you don't build any habits or continuity and that you can just still win it because you're good enough. Like they really did. Like that to me is what they believed. Why would you believe that? Like, and especially now, I just hope that maybe they've learned. I'm like, no, but it sure seems like there's more that goes into it than just showing up and having the talent.
KD's post-game comments about it, you know, this is how we take a learning step here. We could just continue to build on this and get better. It sounds sincere. It sounds like a lot of what fans want to hear, especially after a sweep. There's not much else to say about it. He doesn't want to look back in the rearview mirror. The series is over, et cetera. But I just don't know if I necessarily buy it. Like, it takes a lot more than just saying these kinds of things. You have to assemble a team that's actually committed to doing things in the right way and building a cohesive team. I've made this comment before on this show. I remember saying this, that the big three, that's when James Harden was on the team, were particularly scary, but the Brooklyn Nets as a group are not. And I, you know, that was proven correct in this series. They just are not a group that's committed to winning. They don't have the right pieces around those talented players. And especially when Ben Simmons didn't play for them at all, it's hard to muster any kind of energy or any kind of positive, you know, moving forward. I'm not sure how much they can actually build off of this. I like to hear that from KD at the same time. It's very much wait and see. They have to make some sweeping changes there. And that's sure what options are available for them either.
I still think KD's about the right things. He wanted to play basketball. He would try to play basketball this year. He was phenomenal when he played basketball. He got hurt. Like I don't like KD struggled in the series because so much there wasn't the structure to help him out. And all the burden was on him and the Celtics knew it. Credit to the Celtics. They're phenomenal. We're going to be talking a lot more about them in the coming weeks. Yeah. I don't think they're going anywhere anytime soon. Let's take a break. We'll come back and we'll talk about how the Philadelphia 76ers couldn't close a deal and those pesky Toronto Raptors just keep hanging around. We'll do that when we come back on Locked On NBA. But first, I want to tell you about Prize Picks. Are you looking for a daily fantasy option for the NBA? You need to try the award-winning app Prize Picks. It's daily fantasy made easy. I love it, and we know you're going to love it too. You pick 2 to 5 players and over-under on their projections. I had Embiid unders tonight, 12.5. That cashed. Over on turnovers, that cashed because I listened to all the Sixers podcasts, and all of the Sixers podcasts were like, yeah, Embiid doesn't look like he can rebound, and he doesn't look like he can hold on to the ball. So I took both of those. You can win up to 10 times on an entry, and it's just you versus the projected numbers. Entries can be made in 60 seconds or less. It's just that easy. They offer safe and fast withdrawals, and you can use the award-winning app on both the App Store and Google Play. They've got any prop you can think of, from points scored to rebounds, even steals. I do love getting in on some Marcus Smart steals and blocks. Love me some stocks. And they got mixed sport entries. You can throw in whatever you want from the other sports as well. They don't just do NBA. They've got college basketball, college football, NFL, MLB, soccer, MMA, and more. And for a limited time, Prize Picks has an exclusive no-brainer of an offer for all of our users. You're going to get $50 for free if a player in your first Prize Picks entry scores just a single point, but you have to use code NBA. That's right. It's an exclusive offer available for Locked On fans. Sign up today and use code NBA, and you'll get $50 for free if a player in your first Prize Picks entry scores a single point. Prize Picks is daily fantasy made easy. We'll be right back on Locked On NBA. Back here on Locked On NBA. Thanks for making us part of your day and your first listen each and every day. We're free and available on all platforms. Make your second listen Locked On Now. It's got nightly recaps of all the playoff games from our panel of local hosts. Check it out wherever you get podcasts and on YouTube. It's Locked On Now. Back here with David Ramil breaking down Monday night in the National Basketball Association playoffs. David, Philadelphia 76ers. They got Joel Embiid and James Harden and Tyrese Maxey and Doc Rivers, and they got a lot of folks out, and Maxey doesn't deserve to be lumped in there, but they got a lot of folks in there with some playoff demons. They got some playoff skeletons in the closet, and they go up 3-0. It should be fine. No big deal. And Embiid's hurt his hand. Well, that's unfortunate, but you know what? The Raptors have been so overwhelmed. Well, the Raptors took game four, and then tonight in Philadelphia at home, the Raptors come in and lead the entire way. 103-88 is the final. Pascal Siakam goes for 23 points on 10 of 17 shooting. Good night for him.
Yeah.
10 boards, 7 assists, got a double-double with 7 dimes. Gary Trent Jr., who honestly was expected to be kind of the step up with no Fred VanVleet. They lost to the Raptors without Fred VanVleet. Gary Trent Jr. goes just 5 of 14. Doesn't matter. Scotty Barnes chips in with 12 points. Rookie of the year, Scotty Barnes with 12 points, 8 rebounds. They get 17 points from Precious.
Did not see that.
Friggin' Achiuwa.
Yeah.
Joel Embiid roasted his own defensive performance tonight. He was not ready. That team was not there. They were not plugged in. They were not ready to go. They were overwhelmed. We have a series. I can't believe this, but we got a series.
Yeah, game 6 on Thursday in Toronto. Momentum certainly shifting. I know Embiid didn't look aggressive, and I know they definitely lost those minutes where he wasn't on the floor and Paul Reed wasn't in his place. But how much do you think the injury impacted him? I know what you were saying about the Sixers podcast and things of that sort, but do you think he was really taken out of the game? Maybe he just didn't look as aggressive, and maybe that's just the byproduct of him being hurt. But he also, when he did have the ball in his hands, he just didn't seem like he was the same kind of active scorer that we've seen from him in the past. Was it just because of injury, or was it because, you know, partly because of what Toronto was able to do on defense?
I think it's a combination. Like, they're obviously going to make it hard on him. I think a lot of it is that he's hesitant. I do, like, to me, he looks hesitant.
Yeah, and he said something about that postgame, right? Like, that every time he caught the ball, he just wasn't moving with it right away. He wasn't as decisive as he has been in the past.
I think the pain is a real issue here, where it's just like, I try and think about, like, if you've hurt your hand in any capacity, trying to, like, catch something and then maneuver with it as people are hitting it constantly. Like, that's the other thing, is like, how often do your hands get hit in an NBA game, especially with guys swiping at the ball all the time?
Right.
So I think a lot about that. And I just think that it's taken away some of his aggressiveness and decisiveness. And that's been a lot of how he's punished them, is he's been a lot better at handling the double teams. And that's been a real issue for him consistently. And instead, like, he has another 4 turnover night, right? He has 4 dimes and 4 turnovers. That's a pretty bad look. But look, you know, Embiid was only a -4. Like, they were still in the game in large part during his minutes. I think the bigger problem is not Embiid. I don't put this one at Embiid. I put it on the defense, which cannot be that bad versus a Raptors team with literally no league guards. And James Harden, guess who again? 15 points, 2 rebounds, 7 assists, because he always gets dimes, 4 of 11 shooting, just 11 shots. Like, Danny Green took 10 shots. James Harden took 11. That's concerning. That's pretty worrisome. Matisse Thybulle was a mess. The bench unit was actually pretty okay in general, but not good enough, obviously. Tobias Harris kind of came back down to earth, 16 points on 16 shots. They couldn't stop anybody. To me, like, my concern here is entirely about the mental side of this, which is I've worried about this combination of Doc and Embiid and Harden. That combo is worrisome to me in a playoff environment. If things get tense, if the pressure ramps up, if you're up again, if you face adversity, well, guess what? You're going to Toronto for what's going to be an insane atmosphere with a team that you do not like. Here's the problem. You do not want this Raptors team believing they can win. If you had just snuffed it out, obviously the series is over, but you've let them back in now.
Yeah.
And this is not the team you want in that position.
Right. Right. Who rallies them at this point? Because you mentioned Doc, and you know, he's got his own demons in the playoffs, of course. Harden hasn't been there, and Embiid hasn't been there. Nobody in this roster. I mean, really, the only player that I can think of that has the kind of confidence to say, you know what, we can't pull it together is Danny Green. And I'm not sure he has that kind of power in the locker room at this point in his career. As good a player as he is, as good a role player as he has been in the past, who is the voice there that says, you know what, so what? We're down, we're up 3-2. It's still our series to take control, and gets them to play the best version of themselves. Ideally, that would come from Embiid himself. But as you put it out, the lack of decisiveness, the lack of aggression, et cetera, he just doesn't seem like the same kind of player that he has been all season long. And given that, I'm just not sure where they're going to get that. And you wonder whether or not Toronto can find a way to punch him in the face early on in Toronto, take control of that game, and then refuse to let the Sixers back into it. And I want to make a point of that as well, because we're talking about how bad the Sixers have been and questioning whether or not they can mount a comeback in game 6. which is ludicrous to even talk about considering where we were a week ago, where the series looked like it was dead. And yet the Raptors played really well too. We should give them absolutely some credit because they played a really great game. They had a great game plan. Of course, Nick Nurse, really well executed. And again, without Fred VanVleet, your best player, arguably, you know, to have the kind of night they had on the road in Philadelphia with everything to lose, and they find a way to win it.
There was kind of this discussion point before the game about, yeah, look, you know, Fred was an all-star, and like I thought Fred was very much worthy of all NBA consideration this season. He was phenomenal. Like he's a really great passer and a really great shooter and a really great defender. But one thing they said was the Sixers have a size advantage in almost every position, and or in normal circumstances. But the Raptors are so long, they kind of negate that. And one of the advantages really has been that that Fred can't do much against the bigger guards for the Sixers. Well, now he's out. And now, so like you have nothing but these long dudes everywhere. Right. And that to me, I think seems really like part of the combination that's put in there. And like, look, you look at the offensive numbers, you know, when Siakam was on the floor, they were 115 offensive, 88 defensive. That's phenomenal on both ends. But a lot of these numbers for the Raptors are what you would kind of expect offensively. Like Scottie Barnes, a 105 offensive rating. Gary Trent, a 109 offensive rating. The problem for the Sixers was their limited minutes of defense versus the starters, right? And then their offense just simply fell apart and did not play with any sort of emphasis. You cannot just like walk into – you're not going to walk into threes versus the Raptors. You're not going to ease into shots. They're going to make it hard on you. You ask like who's going to rally them? Look, they've got some really good coaches on that assistant staff. They got Dave Yeager, who's been in these kind of tough spots before, and they've got Sam Cassell, who's been an assistant forever and has played in very big games. They're still assistants. Ultimately, this is the concern, is that you got Doc Rivers trying to close the deal on the road in game six, and that's real tough. So I don't know. Like, I think, you know, ultimately, I will say this. Teams that are up 3-2, okay, when they're up 3-2, they have closed the deal. I looked this up. They are 53-32 in game six, down 3-2. These are the home teams. So the Raptors are, or I'm sorry, these are the away teams. So the Raptors, teams in the Raptors position are 32-53 since 2003. So history.
How many of those 53 win teams have been led by Doc Rivers, however?
Yeah, that's the concern. So, man, it's going to be chaos. I'll say this, if the Sixers win, they're going to have earned it because that environment is going to be tough. We've all kind of, that's been my question, is what's the Sixers team made of? Yeah. We're going to find out in game six for sure. Let's take a break. We'll come back and we'll talk about what the Dallas Mavericks are made of, which is hot lava, apparently. We'll do that when we come back on Locked On NBA. But first, BetOnline is your number one source for all your betting stats and sports info. I almost went 3-0 on the night. I had the Celtics on the money line, and I had the Mavs on the money line, and I trusted those darn Sixers on a parlay. Wah, wah. Find all the latest sports developments, league reviews, and news, including this year's basketball playoffs and the start of the Major League Baseball season at BetOnline. It's your continued source for all your sports wagering information, from live betting, playoffs, esports, and more. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to learn more about the trends in action. BetOnline, where the game starts. We'll be right back on Locked On NBA. Back here on Locked On NBA, thanks for making us your first listen each and every day. We're free and available on all platforms, including YouTube, where you can check out a stream of the show. Just search for Locked On NBA on YouTube. So, David, the series between Dallas and Utah has been pretty fascinating. Luka doesn't start the series. The Jazz take game one, and we're like, oh, the Mavericks just do not have enough weaponry. Jalen Brunson leads them, has a phenomenal game two. And some of the cracks again start to show in this Jazz team, like they have before when teams start to space them out. It gets worse in game three. In game four, I kind of chuckled a little bit because the Jazz get Maxi Kleba fouls out. Spencer Dinwiddie has a worse game even than normally, and he hasn't been good. Luka makes a series of pretty poor decisions down the stretch. The Jazz get a game-winning lob from Donovan Mitchell to Rudy Gobert to win by one. And then Rudy Gobert is talking about F the talk and all of these types of things. Well, the talk, unfortunately, is back as the Dallas Mavericks ran wild on the Jazz in Dallas in Game 5. 102-77. It was not as close as that makes it seem. Utah shoots, oh my goodness, 3 of 30 from three-point range.
I don't know what to think. I don't know what to say. They're 10%. Not good. You know, and it gets worse. Donovan Mitchell at one point in the fourth quarter landed to the ground there. It looked like he was pulling up his hamstring, rushed immediately to the locker room, and who knows what his availability will be like for game 6 there. Things are not going great in Utah, and Dallas seems to be rolling. So their defense was phenomenal. Obviously, Utah's had their defensive issues. Those were magnified tonight as well. Jalen Brunson with another big night, 24. Not as efficient, 9 of 20, but a pretty good night overall. Just 1 of 7 from three-point range. But still productive minutes. And then Luka Doncic just catching fire like he does. 11 of 22 for 33 points. Big night for him.
Mitchell said they'd tighten up like that before, and they probably anticipated pain in the next couple of days. When asked if he played through the pain, he said, quote, "I'm a competitor." Donovan Mitchell suffered a left hamstring injury and will be reevaluated in Salt Lake City tomorrow. Donovan Mitchell will have an MRI on that tomorrow. You can't play on those hamstrings.
No.
Like, it's just not doable. You can try. Lowry. Chris Paul tried. I'll say that. Yeah. Chris Paul did it in 2015 in that first round series between the Clippers and the Spurs. He strained his hamstring and just played through it and actually hit the game winner because Chris Paul's amazing. But I would imagine like there's a pretty good chance that we've seen the last game that Donovan Mitchell plays in a Jazz uniform, which is wild. Like that's possible.
Just rubbing salt in the Utah wound right now.
I don't know what to tell you. Like, I mean, I get because here's the thing. This all seems very telegraphed. I was reading some of the Jazz folks tonight that I follow on Twitter, and that was very much like, look, we saw this coming. We hoped it wouldn't go. It wouldn't happen like this. We thought maybe they would have that run where they come together. But like they've been telling us who they are and how they feel for months, and they just didn't show up in this game at all. What's interesting, though, is the question of like Quinn Snyder said after the game that they came to compete. He felt like they just didn't play well, didn't execute, and didn't shoot well. Like, you can look at that 3 of 30 and just be like, what are you going to do? You shoot 3 of 30 from 3, you're not going to win the game. It just very much seems like the bigger problem is that they can't. Luka was clowning them. Luka's cold-blooded, man. He has, like, some stuff where you're just like, this is a little serial killer-ish. It's scary. he put Gobert through a series of moves underneath that were just brutal. 33 points for Luka, 13 rebounds and 5 assists with 5 turnovers. They outscored the Jazz by 32 points when Luka Doncic was on the floor in this game in 33 minutes. That's wild.
You mentioned Spencer Dinwiddie not having a big game. He went 2 of 5 for 3-point range. He hit one more 3-pointer than the whole starting lineup for the Utah Jazz. I mean, you're not going to get a ton there. I mean, 0 for 5 for Bogdanovich, 0 of 7 for Mitchell, 0 of 3 for Conley. Like they weren't hitting. And some of that is because of Dallas's great defense. But yet, I mean, Donovan continues to take bad shots even before he got hurt. You mentioned the Chris Paul trying to fight his way through the injury. Mitchell, a completely different player. He needs that explosiveness. And he's already been inefficient and, you know, struggled for most of the series. He can't get it done if he's not at 100%.
And he's credited Dorian Finney-Smith with his play in locking him down. I kind of realized this. Dorian Finney-Smith may be, in my opinion, the most Miami Heat player that's not on the Miami Heat. That's what I've kind of realized. Like,
I'm not saying anything about it. I don't want to be accused of tampering or anything like that. But
tough, physical, really an all NBA, all defense league guy, really just terrific stuff. So they head back to Utah for game 6. I don't know what to expect out of Utah in this game. I don't expect much. I say I like Dallas pretty well in this spot. Seems like they've kind of figured them out, that they let it slip in game 4, but I think Dallas has proven over the course of the series, they're just the better team. And I don't think Utah will have what it takes with or without Mitchell to get past. Before we get out of here, John Morant wins most improved player for 2021-22. Everyone has a take, David. Everyone feels the need to have a take about most improved. So I will ask you, do you have a take on Ja Morant winning most improved?
No, I do not. I'm sorry. I really don't. I'm going against the grain here. I think it's fine. I think it's a ridiculous award. I think the criteria is off. I don't know exactly how you measure a really good rookie season and then, you know, how you compare that to what he was able to accomplish this year. I don't know that there was any other name out there that might be more deserving. And so I'm happy for Morant. I'm happy for the Grizzlies fans because they get their player and they get a postseason award. It might be their only chance at really getting a postseason award. And so, yeah, it's fine. Do you have a take on it? I mean, it seems like you have a strong opinion about it.
I don't. I think it's fine. Like I said, I kind of agree with you where it's very nebulous. I kind of think there's more interesting awards that we could give now just from a number of perspectives. And you know, even if it, I think the issue is you're never going to get the voting block to ever kind of agree on this, because you also are never going to get them to agree on what valuable means, right? Like, right. That's the whole thing. You leave it up to interpretation. The only thing I'll say is I do kind of think that Ja is a good example of a guy who had moved so far beyond that it needs to go to somebody who's like trying to make their way up and really trying to make their name known. To me, I would have voted for Darius Garland. If I'd had a vote, I would have gone for Darius Garland. But DeJounte Murray, you know, Spurs fans were upset. A lot of good candidates, but I think also here's the kind of thing. If you're getting most improved, it means that there was honestly a level to which you weren't as good before. And right. For Morant, it's like everyone thought he was amazing, and now he's just more amazing. And that was – I don't mind that line of thought, but I also – again, I would just stress for everyone, don't get upset about most improved player. Be like David. Don't have a take. That's – that's better.
For you know everyone. What I missed, Matt? I missed the comeback player of the year award. That was
yeah, me too. Award. That'd be Victor Oladipo. My being in line for that. All right. That's going to wrap it up for Locked On NBA. Thanks for joining us. You can follow David on Twitter at DRamil13. I'm on Twitter at HP Basketball. You can follow Locked On Heat for coverage of the Miami Heat's playoff run, which will continue into the second round, I am sure. And you can follow Locked On Nuggets for discussion of whatever's going to await the Denver Nuggets after a game five in, not Oracle, Chase Center. So we'll see how that goes. Thanks for joining us, everybody. Be back tomorrow with more coverage from the NBA. We'll see you guys again next time on Locked On NBA.